Threat Film Radio. One World International Human Rights Documentary Film Festival in Prague, Czech Republic.
Threat Film Radio, I'm Matt Micucci from the 2019 One World Film Festival, and I'm very pleased to be joined by filmmaker Sean McAllister.
That's me having a piss.
Pre-interview. I always like to have a piss before an interview.
What's better than a piss before an interview? And we're here to talk about A Northern Soul, a wonderful film. But I was just wondering, just to start us off, if you could tell the listeners who may not be familiar just a little bit about it, a short introduction.
Well, it's a film up in my hometown, Hull, that follows Steve Arnott, a factory worker, in the year of the City of Culture, trying to do a cultural dream of his, which was to take hip hop to council estates across the city.
How did you meet Steve, first of all?
I met him at the opening that I'd done at City of Culture. I did the opening show for the year, and Steve came along. I was showing my previous film, A Syrian Love Story, and he approached me with a little handwritten note saying, "That's my cultural dream for the year, to get a Beats bus and take it to the city. Why don't you come and film me?"
Yeah, and what did you think of that idea?
Well, I'd done this big multi-million pound opening at the City of Culture, and to be quite honest, I was looking for a story, I was looking for a film, and I was looking at a way of exploring the difficulties of the North and life in Britain today, and I thought it was the perfect thing to look at, really.
Why did you think that?
Because I'd done the opening, and Steve's small dream seemed to be such an amazing way to look at what was really going on in the city, and also to see how an ordinary working-class person could engage in culture during the City of Culture.
So was he happy that you would be filming him? And like, because I know that in this film you have sort of a close connection. It's not your typical documentary connection where you're just filming a subject. It's more personal than that.
It was, yeah. I mean, he was more than happy. As I say, he'd approached me and really wanted the film. The film. Yeah, he wanted. He said, "Why don't you come and film me?"
Why do you think he wanted that?
I think, I always feel that there's some sort of, there's something in people. That for me, it was also a good indication of a positive catalyst for change, that someone wants something to change. Honestly, why do I think he wanted that? Because I think he wanted his life, which was going nowhere, to change. That's what I think. And I think without the film, he wouldn't have ultimately left the factory, which was I was a kind of mentor for him, the film holding his hand, and I don't know. I mean, no one knew what was really going to happen in that year eventually. But I always think, why did he want it? I don't think he just wanted it for fame and celebrity. I think he wanted it because he wanted something to happen in his life and there was nothing happening.
Do you also think that maybe he wanted someone to just talk to sometimes?
I think he'd also known my background. I think he'd known that I'd worked in factories and managed to go and do something outside of the city. So I think there was a part of him that had... But I don't think any of that was even really conscious, because as you watch the film, when I'm pushing him to leave, he's absolutely saying, I can't be a starving artist.
Yeah.
So even in the film, it was like, no, you don't understand. I've got kids, I've got mouths to feed, But that was all his defence mechanism that was fighting within him.
You know, do you identify with some aspects of his life?
Oh, totally. And that's one of the reasons I made the film with him, was because he was a white working class guy in a factory now. And I was a white working class guy in the 80s under Thatcher in a factory that managed to sort of change. And I wanted to look at how Britain had changed from Thatcher's 80s to now, really, and now social mobility and all of those things that they say are out there are possible, you know.
Yeah. Well, actually, one of the things that about the film I thought was great was that it does also seem to talk about different generations. I love that shot of your parents, for instance, who were just falling asleep when they're in the back garden. I don't know, it felt symbolic to me in some way.
It was definitely all about that. I was interested in looking, well, the reason I was filming them was because my dad had put a working class factory worker that had paid into a pension that was enjoying his pension. You know, that scene when he says, "How much does Steve earn? Bloody hell, I think I get more than that in my pension." You know, that is the that is, for him, he's totally was totally disheartened with how Britain had turned out. The end sequence when my father's at the proms enjoying that kind of scene. What was interesting for me was that he was a working class person, pensioner, enjoying the proms. That was totally not there for Steve, the new generation. So that gap had widened between rich and poor.
A film like this to me is very important also because people identify with it. And it's also about topics about, you know, what you talked about, pension and just real life problems that people usually don't feel comfortable in sharing, and sometimes they just keep it all for themselves. So do you also think about that, the importance of your films in that sense?
I think so. I mean, that scene with his bankruptcy and with facing his debts, I mean, it's a very private moment, but because you've kind of worked so long with somebody filming, you're comfortably in that moment with him when he tells you that. And I think that he's not uncommon, unfortunately. You know, how many working people are falling into debt? How many people are living beyond their means in Britain today? It's just an invisible debt. In-work poverty is the new poverty in Britain today. The streets are littered with the homeless, but the homeless are just one level. I think within the working community, there's never been a higher proportion of in-work poverty, which is leading to things like suicides and stuff, you know.
I think we kind of just sort of discussed it a little bit in the previous questions, but I guess I just want to ask you again and talk about it a bit more. Especially relating to the arts right now, is it possible to do anything artistic for a living and just that anymore?
I mean, probably not. I mean, there are the rarities, but they're the rarities, you know. I mean, in a funny kind of way, Steve's managed to break free and find a way of funding the bus and doing his thing. But, I mean, I wonder how much of that would have been possible without the film.
Yeah, that's true. So you think it did have some sort of an impact on that?
Well, undoubtedly, because he managed to raise £30,000 on the GoFundMe campaign and had a lot of support after the film was on the BBC and touring the film around the cinemas and stuff. But I think for me what it's about is that there's so many Steves across the UK and across the world who are locked in jobs and trapped from their dreams that are all capable of so much more. And I think maybe if they see Steve's story and they see his attempt at doing something, it might offer an empowerment to other people for self-belief that they can break out and, you know, follow their dream.
So just watching your previous works as well, one of the things that I really love about your films is that you put yourself in them. And I always wondered, like, where that sort of came from. Was that always part of your filmmaking, or was there a specific reason behind that choice?
I think it was just an extension of who I am and how I am with people, really, when I've got the camera and when I haven't. It's more or less the same, and the curiosity. I think when I went to film school, I tried to find my voice, which was a way of making films that didn't feel like making films, certainly didn't feel like work, you know, and it was enabling me to go around and be on a small format camera, very comfortable and very close to someone. And I think it's a careful balance between mediating myself and being too much of a Michael Moore presence and having a presence behind the camera. I think it helps mediate. I always feel when I go to places far-flung like Syria or Japan or Yemen, that it helps connect with an audience who are often, in the back of my head, a couple of mates in Hull. How am I going to get them to a bizarre place in Yemen? And I'm the go-between, really. That's why I kind of put myself in it as a mediation, really. Mediator.
Mediation, yeah. And is there any influence as well from maybe storytelling that isn't necessarily documentary? I was going to say fiction filmmaking, but I guess what I mean is just something maybe even greater than that. Influence beyond a documentary film form that you always think of, even just maybe when you're putting the film together, to kind of have that story out there for the people to see.
I always think a good old love story. Most of my films are always connected around a kind of love story. I think everyone likes a love story. Kind of in Japan, it was about a love story. In Syria, it was about a love story, keeping, you know, a couple together. And in a way, Steve's connection with the kids, and he finds love with Yaz at the end. You know, I think the common. I always try to keep universal themes wherever I go. I'm interested in politics, but I try to bury the politics in a very human, accessible story. So usually there's very, you know, limited politics and a lot more of the universal. Plus character, I love fun characters.
There's also the love story of Steve with his daughter, which I thought was
I mean, that's very kind of, you know, no one really thinks about those long journeys to see your daughter when you can't drive and you're finishing a 2-to-10 shift.
But that is real life, and that is what I watch movies for. And sometimes I feel like I'm not getting real life from what I'm watching. I don't know whether you share that frustration. I guess that is my frustration though, a little bit.
Well, I think it's interesting, isn't it, that Steve represents the majority, but it's very, very... And when I took it to the BBC, I remember the commissioning editor at the BBC saying, man, we've got to put this on TV because he's such an everyday person and he's never on TV. And I said, isn't that bizarre that he's the everyday majority person and you sat here telling me he's never on TV? Why? Why isn't the everyday ordinary person always on TV? So why do people like Steve put up with watching TV that's not about them?
Well, you see, I'd say that the argument there, and this is a terrible argument, but for a lot of people who may not even be aware of the difference, is that they could say, well, reality TV now, that's where your everyday people are. That's kind of
I guess that's also true, but I think also that people like Steve are not making films about Steve. The people usually making films about Steve have graduated from Oxford or Cambridge or somewhere else, going into communities that don't quite get people like Steve. So I think what happened with me and Steve was that Steve felt very comfortable with me because he knew we were both wore the same shoes, in a sense. And I think that's what we need to get more of, where you get television and films being made by all walks of life, so that you've got working class people being represented by working class filmmakers.
I totally agree with you. Totally agree with you. So we went a bit over the time, but it's a great conversation.
Start, though, wasn't it, with a waterfall?
That was great. That was the best part of the interview. That's actually not getting edited out. So thank you very much.
Taking a leak.
Thank you very much, Jenny. Well, actually, that is real life too, isn't it? Taking a leak. I want to see more people take leaks in movies. That's it. We're
done. Next opening scene.
There you go. Thanks very much. And this is Fred Film Radio, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on Fred.fm and smartphone apps.